Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest, my very patient guest, both because I screwed up my intro about 8 times and I haven't invited him back for several years, and I assume he's just been waiting for my call, is Brian Hamilton. Brian, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be back on Random Trek. I had such a fun time. When was it? 2015! And I'm really excited to have another fun time in 2019 and in 2023 and 2027.
You know, it's like the Olympics. Every 4 years, I invite you back and we talk about Star Trek. But before we jump...
Cool. Here's the torch. I have lit it just for you, and I figured it would be a nice ceremonial gift.
Thank you. And now my house is on fire. before we jump into talking about Star Trek, Brian, why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself?
Well, I make podcasts here on the Incomparable. You've likely heard me on the TV Game of Thrones feed, and you've likely heard me on the game show feed. And I'd like to plug my other project, Most Important Meal, which is about breakfast foods and love that my partner and I, Truge, do together. And it's very cute and very fun. So if you think I'm funny here, wait till you hear me talk about breakfast. I would like to think I'm just as funny there.
There you go. And also, eat breakfast, people. I am going to tell you something, Brian, that might make you very sad. But I have, through the last couple of years, this is not the part that'll make you sad, although maybe it will, I decided maybe like 2.5 years ago, I should lose some weight to be healthier. And, you know, I was dealing with a lot of stuff in my personal life and I gained like 80 pounds. So I was like, I need to lose some weight. So I did. It was my own decision. Very happy with it. The consequence of it, though, is that I eat the same exact breakfast every day, which is 3 hard-boiled eggs and 2 bananas.
That sounds awesome. You got a full house of foods there.
I know, but it's not exciting. If I had a podcast about breakfast, it would be boring because I always have the same breakfast.
Well, that we should have you on. We'll talk about breakfast routines because that's something we talk about a lot on the podcast. Well, this is not the breakfast podcast. This is the Random Trek podcast. What are we talking about tonight, Scott?
Oh, this is like the Flophouse all of a sudden. well, we're talking about Voyager, Brian.
Star Trek Voyager, the TV show that aired from 1996 to 2001, I think?
Possibly. Who knows these details? Not me. But before Brian, let's talk a little bit about your interest in Star Trek. Now, you are a younger fellow than I, which I say only because I wonder if that has any impact on your Star Trek fandom. Or if you even consider yourself a Star Trek fan, which I think I know the answer to. But answer that question first. Are you a Star Trek fan, Brian?
I'm not a particular Star Trek fan, but I always enjoy the episodes I watch, especially for this show, because there's so much Star Trek that almost like comic books or almost like how Marvel felt to me. It felt really inaccessible to me until the movies came out. And it was like, this is one line you can sit and just watch, you know, these 20 movies and there'll be one complete story and they'll be fine. I feel the same way about Star Trek, where I know in my heart I need to just sit down and pick a series and watch it. And honestly, I think at this point in Voyager might be that season or that series, because I've heard amazing things about Janeway as a character. Mm-hmm. We didn't have much Janeway this episode, by the way, but that made me sad. Anyway, I just need to sit down and watch a Star Trek series and then jump around from there and see what happens. But it's not something that's been nearly as big of a part of my life as I'm sure it has been with you.
It's been a large part of my life. Now, I know you are a regular on various TV flashcasts where we talk about, and I say we, but I'm not. I think I was on a Game of Thrones one, maybe. I don't know. It's who knows? So many podcasts. But specifically, you talk about Game of Thrones and possibly other TV shows on the TV flashcast podcast thing. Game of Thrones, highly serialized. You know, there's an arc. You can't really jump in like, you know, the fourth season, the third episode of the fourth season of Game of Thrones, whatever that is, probably not the best place to start watching Game of Thrones. I am saying this because Voyager and The Next Generation and of course the original series are very episodic, so you don't have to watch the whole thing. You can just jump in wherever you want and you'll be fine. And this episode proves that. Drive, which is season 7, a 7th season, which is the final season of Voyager, episode 3. And I emphasize that fact because I feel like, Brian, Game of Thrones, their last season, controversial last season, just aired. Those episodes were precious, and they had to pack in so much stuff to finish the story in each episode. There was no time for lollygagging about, right? There was all like focus on what we need to get done, which was some people criticized it for. We contrast that with this third episode of the seventh season of Voyager, in which, you know, they're just doing whatever.
Yeah, if I jumped into season 7, episode 3 of Game of Thrones, I would not have a good time. But watching season 7, episode 3 of Voyager, I had a really great time. I'm looking at the Wikipedia page now, and there's 26 episodes per season except for the first. And yeah, they got to fill all that story somehow. And yes, we just so happened upon an episode where something really big happens at the end. So it was a nice moment of like, oh, I can just jump in wherever. Oh, maybe not. Maybe I did miss 6 seasons of character development, which we'll get to.
I think you probably missed you did miss 6 seasons of character development, but that particular plot line, I think, started maybe in the 6th season, so you didn't miss a whole heck of a lot. I feel like someone is probably now writing me an email to tell me I am wrong about that. I am not a Voyager expert, so I could be wrong when, and ooh, this is the big spoiler here is, which is not a spoiler because this is an old show, Tom Paris and B'Elanna Torres at the end of this get engaged. And I believe they were they started going out either in the 5th or 6th season. I don't know. I'm also not a big Tom Paris fan, so but we can get into that.
Hey, white bread has its purpose. You can put mayo on it. You can put turkey on it. It's versatile.
Well, it's true, and he tries, I guess.
He wants to do the race so badly.
He is big into racing stuff. He's a pilot. So, you know, this episode is highly focused on Tom Paris. This is a Tom Paris episode. I was worried. Tom Paris is not my least favorite character on Voyager. My least favorite character is Harry Kim. And I was worried that this was going to be a Tom Paris, Harry Kim episode. But Harry
Kim... It starts off that way.
It does. But then he kind of shuffles off later and is replaced by B'Elanna for reasons that become clear towards the end of the episode. So why don't we just jump in at the start here, right?
Yeah, let's do it.
Here's the thing you have to remember, people who have never watched Voyager. Voyager is stranded very far away from Earth. Their resources are precious. They're struggling to get back to Earth. Captain Janeway's mission is to return her crew. They've been gone for, at this point, I guess 7 years. Maybe a little longer, maybe a little less. And they are desperate to be home. And yet, in every other episode of Voyager, they're like, well, we can make a detour. We can waste resources on random stuff. Let's have some fun. So this is one of those, let's just, join this interstellar race for no apparent reason.
I always had the perception that Star Trek and Starfleet in general was like a government entity that sends this ship and this crew of people on missions to do various things, mm-hmm. almost like Serenity on Firefly, but with government interference. And I didn't actually know what you just said about Voyager, that they're trying to get back to Earth. Mm-hmm. So seeing, like, knowing that in the context of this episode, I honestly thought it was just, another, government thing sending people off into space. They spend so much time talking about time off and resources and things like that. I never would have known that they were, lost trying to get back to Earth. Or if not lost, then like very far away trying to get back to Earth.
They are stranded. They know where they are and they know where they need to be. But it will take them a very long time to get back to Earth. And they've been struggling for the last several seasons to get back to Earth. This basically, it is Battlestar Galactica minus the grittiness, which is how I sum up Voyager. And there are no Cylons, but they're Borg, or I guess Cylon equivalents. Now, Battlestar Galactica fans are writing me emails about how the Borg are not Cylon equivalents. It's shorthand, people. But anyway, back to this episode. Harry Kim, Tom Paris, they're flying around the Delta Flyer. Apparently, they've souped it up, and now they're testing it out. And their soup up involves putting levers and old-fashioned switches on the Delta Flyer for some reason. I don't know. Aesthetics?
Old-fashioned in our timeline or old-fashioned in Voyager timeline?
Yes. They are old-fashioned for everybody. They're really old-fashioned for Voyager. This is like, beyond steampunk for the Voyager timeline.
Ooh.
And I could see Tom Paris kind of being a steampunk kind of person. And so they're flying around in an asteroid belt and or asteroid field. And along comes another ship, like a random ship that's like, hey, that's a nice ship. I bet you can't beat me to that comet. And that's Harry Kim doesn't want to do it. Tom Paris does. And off to the races they go.
This is a nice way to set up, like, so my last episode of Random Trek was about season 4, episode 20, Vis-a-Vis, wherein Tom Paris wants to go into the holodeck and soup up a Chevy. And I remembered that instantly when I saw this, like, oh, he's basically Mad Max character at this point, just racing around having a good time, but in space.
Yes, he enjoys tinkering with things and then racing them against other people. So, and there's nothing wrong with that. It never has appealed to me, but that's because I don't know anything about how anything works. So I cannot tinker with things. And so they have a race. The Delta Flyer wins, but the other ship starts to have some distress. So they beam over the pilot. The pilot turns out to be a lady whose name is Irina, something like that.
Asana? They said Asana. They said Asana later in the episode, and I thought, wait, like the task manager? What? Unless Asana is another character, I'm sure.
I think Asana might be her co-pilot.
Ah, okay, that makes sense.
I don't know, but they beam her over, and she's like, "Thank you very much. This is a cool ship you have, but can you help me fix mine?" And Tom Paris is like, "Of course, we'll help you fix your ship." They don't seem all that interested in finding out more about her, but I think as I was watching this, I thought, "Why don't they want to know more about her?" But now I understand why.
Knew this was a bad idea, right? Like, all my alarms were going off this whole time.
It's a bad idea on many levels, but I can kind of see later in the episode when Tom Paris is like, oh, we need to do this race because I want to, and Tuvok, the Vulcan, is like, no, this is a waste of time. We shouldn't do it. Captain Janeway says, we should do it. It'll be fun. The crew needs to blow off steam. So I was like, okay, I get it, but I still think it's a bad idea. And as it turns out, we find out later, it was a very bad idea. But
okay, so I know nothing about Janeway as a character except for what I've heard in, you know, other pieces of media, people talking about how great Janeway is of a character. This is not how I expected her to act on an episode of Star Trek where she says, let everyone blow off steam, it'll be fine. I guess that's the point, right? This is an inversion where it's unexpected for her to say that?
No, well, I think one of the things that people like so much about Janeway is that she is more empathetic to her crew than other captains. Like Captain Picard was not an approachable captain. He was, and this is not to say people don't respect Captain Janeway, but she gets her respect differently than Captain Picard, who gets his respect through, you know, being this unassailable kind of person you put on up on a pedestal, and you aspire to be him. But you'd be kind of uncomfortable if you were with him by yourself, because you'd be thinking, oh, I can't screw anything up. It's kind of like Steve Jobs, right? You didn't want to, when you were working at Apple, you didn't want to be in the elevator by yourself with Steve Jobs because he would ask you a question and then you would be like, oh God, if I answer this wrong, he's going to fire me. That's kind of how I think of Captain Picard, only probably a little nicer. Captain Janeway, it seems like if I had to pick a captain to serve under, I would pick Captain Janeway because she's a science officer. She cares about what, you know, what is wrong with people and how they're dealing with stress. But she's not afraid to make tough decisions. She doesn't really make tough decisions in this episode. Her decision is let's go to the races. But
yeah, I think Janeway is the reason that Voyager is my number one Star Trek series to possibly go through and watch all of, because she seems really great. One of the other things I heard about her is that half of the writing staff loved her and half of the writing staff hated her. So the way she's written varies wildly from episode to episode sometimes. Can you corroborate that?
That is true. She can vary from episode to episode, much like other characters. But I do think they, especially in the first season, they struggled with what to do with Captain Janeway. Because, you know, she was the first woman captain. And so they were like, we don't want to go too stereotypical and get flack for that. We want to treat her as, you know, because in the future, it doesn't matter what gender you are, right? Which is the way it should be. You are just a person, and she's a competent officer, and she's earned her place, but you also don't want to, you know, neglect who she is as a person, right? So I think they had to figure that out as they were going. And Captain, what's her name? I was going to call her Captain Janeway. The actress
from Discovery?
Kate Mulgrew. There you go. The person who plays Captain Janeway, who is a fantastic actor, doesn't play Captain Janeway as, like, she doesn't play up her, she doesn't make a big deal that she's a woman captain, and she shouldn't, because given the setting. And so I think it was right for them not to kind of steer into that, because it's just kind of like, you know, she's a woman, who cares? She's the captain. But I think that, yes, the writers were trying to figure that out as they were
exactly.
going.
Exactly. And the way that, you know, Star Trek has always been, you know, very intentionally and overtly, like, chill about different diversity things, where, like, it was the first kiss on television between a white person and non-white person. We have a female captain who doesn't really call attention to the fact that she's a woman mm-hmm. in a bunch of different ways. And, like, it's almost like how if you take a moment in time and people imagine what few hundred years in the future is going to be like, you know, Captain Kirk can kiss anyone he wants, including people who aren't white. And even, you know, he's a creep. But, like, the ways that you can see the show kind of try to extrapolate what an early 2000s view of a, like, super equal, progressive future is really interesting, to the point where, you know, I haven't seen Discovery yet, but I'm sure the, you know, 2017, 2018, 2019 version of that is very different.
Yes. And so it's interesting because all of that, it is clear. So from the original series onward, Gene Roddenberry had this vision that in the future, none of this stuff would matter. And so everybody was equal, which is, you know, a fine future. And we're working towards that. Well, some of us working harder than others. But the interesting thing is that each of those shows obviously is rooted in the time in which it was made. And so as you're watching them 10, 20, 50 years after they've been made, you can appreciate what they were trying to do, but also realize where they kind of stumbled and fell and were a product of their time. So that makes it interesting on another level.
100%. The way that, you know, you hear, you know, old straight white men say, like, I don't care if you're black, purple, gray, or whatever, like, in such a dismissive way that it's really screwed up. I feel like that's the same kind of way that Gene Roddenberry approached it initially, where, like, even though it, quote unquote, didn't matter to him and, quote unquote, didn't matter in the world he created, you know, there's still token characters everywhere. And that's mm-hmm. what's, you know, kind of limiting about the way that Star Trek sees the future, to the point where, you know, now thinking about it, I kind of want to watch Discovery just to see what a 2018 version of that is going to be.
Well, I highly recommend Discovery, and there's a podcast you can listen to as well. After you watch each episode, you can hear Jason Snell and I talk about the episode you just watched in Vulcan Hello on the Incomparable Network. Yes, that's a little buzz marketing for another podcast.
Have Discovery episodes folded their way into Random Trek yet? Do you include those?
They are on the spreadsheet, but we have not done one yet.
Interesting.
Yes, it's going to be very difficult, as our earlier chat about how it's Discovery also is very serialized, so, you know, it's going to be difficult. But that's I'll cross that bridge when I get to it.
Bringing it back to this episode, one of the things I was really struck by was how much of a sense of ship life I got just from, like, this one random episode of season 7 I watched, where people are really talking about things like time off or resources mm-hmm. or seeing seeing the doctor golf and, like, think this is a cool, fun human doctor thing to do. I loved that. The fact that they packed that into one episode that I'm sure they didn't actually, you know, focus too much on. They weren't writing this in 2001 thinking, and one day in 2019, Brian Hamilton will watch this and it'll be the only episode of Voyager he's watched in years. But, like, I loved seeing all of that in a way that, bring it back to earlier, it almost didn't matter. And all those little details they put in really spoke to me.
Yes. And this episode has, I mean, it's not very complicated, right? So I feel like we quickly summarize the plot, which is this lady alien needs her ship fixed. She tells them about this race that's happening. Tom Paris is like, OMG, I love to race, and we should be part of it because this race is basically brought peace to this section of space because four alien races were fighting and now they have a tentative peace. And this race is commemorating that peace. So Tom Paris is like, this will be part of our diplomatic efforts. Captain Janeway is like, sure, what do I care? Let's go. And while that's happening, B'Elanna Torres is spending a whole lot of time trying to get enough holodeck time so that she and Tom Paris can have a romantic weekend on the holodeck together, going to some resort planet in the holodeck, apparently.
So why do they need time on the holodeck? Is it time away from the ship that they're negotiating, or specifically time on the holodeck that they're negotiating?
So since they're stranded in a very far sector of space away from Earth, holodeck time has been rationed. And so B'Elanna is trying to gather up as much holodeck time as she can get for, I guess, the whole weekend, so that she and Tom can spend the whole weekend in the holodeck, which is a lot of questions for me. Like, can you shower in the holodeck? Do you use the bathroom in the holodeck? I don't know how that works.
Oh, God, the philosophical implications of the holodeck is something I don't want to talk about right now.
The holodeck is a very complicated, simple concept. And so I guess they're just going to spend the whole weekend in the holodeck, going, hanging out in a holographic resort town. I assume that's something you do in the holodeck. I don't know. I feel like if the holodeck existed and I had access to the holodeck, I would never leave the holodeck. So, because why wouldn't you? It is the perfect environment. It could be whatever you exactly want. People get addicted to like World of Warcraft and that is not the perfect environment. So the holodeck, very dangerous.
It's almost like how Superman, like when they created Superman, they made like the strong laser eye, you know, fly around X-ray vision person. They're like, wait, crap, where do we go from here? And they need to like come up with artificial restraints to make Superman a compelling character. I feel like that's the holodeck.
Yes, but luckily this is not a holodeck episode. Sometimes holodeck episodes can be great. Most of the time they're not. This is an episode in which the holodeck plays a plot, a key plot point, but it is not in fact visited. And so B'Elanna visits the doctor. He is the last 3 hours she needs, but he wants to go golfing because he thinks that's what human doctors do, which is true.
Is he not human? What is he?
He is a hologram.
Oh, wait. Okay. Now, Voyager, number one TV show I'm watching now. Definitely going to jump in. I need to know about the robo doctor.
Yes, he's the emergency medical hologram, and that's why his name, everyone calls him Doctor, because that's his name, the doctor. And so he wants to, he's one of these Star Trek characters, one of these archetype Star Trek characters who is not human, but wants to kind of emulate humans or become human. I'm not sure if he wants to become human, but he wants to become closer to being human. Seven of Nine wants to be human, begrudgingly. She is human, but anyway, doesn't matter. Seven of Nine is hardly in this episode at all. So the doctor wants to play golf, but B'Elanna basically guilts him into giving her his 3 hours so that finally her perfect weekend in the holodeck is complete. What could go wrong? Turns out that the race that Tom Paris is super excited about being at, can you see where this is going? That's right. This is like a sitcom plot here. coincides with B'Elanna's hard-planned vacation. And B'Elanna, not wanting to ruin Tom Paris's fun and be a wet blanket, says, oh, no, it's fine, Tom. Go off and race. I'll just stay here by myself and sit in the holodeck for 2 days.
Gender politics. Sounds great.
Yes. And he's like, well, if you're sure, okay. And off to the races he goes.
Wow, that was easy. I don't need to examine that at all.
Exactly. Clearly, she's fine. She said it's fine.
She said so. I mean, I don't know what else I wanted to do.
No. And then she goes to, this is where, dear listener, we find out that it wasn't fine. Because she goes to talk to Neelix, and Neelix is like, hey, you look down. And she explains the whole situation. Neelix is like, well, did you tell him how, you know, disappointed you are and how much effort went into this? And she says, no. And then he's like, well, maybe you should, I don't know, talk to him about it. And I don't generally like Neelix. But this is good advice from Neelix. He's like, why don't you just need to talk to him and let him know that you spent so much time on this. He probably just doesn't realize it. And yes, he should have probably asked himself, but he didn't. So this doesn't have to be a huge thing if you just talk about it. And she's like, I don't know.
From this one episode, Neelix seems pretty big and bombastic and like fills the room with his energy and like big bombastic voice and everything. And the later on when he's kind of sports commentating the race and this person's yes. racing out into the first and like doing the same. It was really strange in contrast to this relatively small scene where he's trying to comfort the main female protagonist whose name I can't remember.
Belana Torres.
Thank you.
You're welcome. It's what I'm here for. yes, Neelix is perhaps one of the more loathed of Star Trek characters because he varies widely from kind of giving what I think is good heartfelt advice to B'Elanna to hamming it up in being a race announcer. So yeah, and he had a problematic relationship. It was there's a lot to unpack with Neelix, so it's better left unsaid. but long story short, they are going to enter the race. Voyager is excited to be part of it. There's a problem in which one of the, you know, the ambassador comes onto Voyager and checks out their ship, I guess, and says, okay, you've meet the requirements because the lady that they met earlier gives them some kind of piece of equipment, and I only mention this because it will become important later.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yes, that allows the Delta
Chekhov's
Flyer.
Chekhov's fuel converter.
Exactly. It lets basically the Delta Flyer become race legal so that they can enter the race with the Delta Flyer. And he's there and he's like, oh no, the race is going to be disrupted because one of the alien races wants to hold the closing ceremony, but we promised it to another one and now everything's going to blow up. And Captain Janeway says, we'll just host it here on Voyager. Hooray! And I thought, this ambassador is not very good because this is a very obvious solution to his problem. But Janeway's there.
Yeah, they talk about the like they talk about the political implications of the race and how this is like the first time they've ever been able to, you know, do something like this to celebrate their newfound camaraderie and everything. But is that ever revisited? Like, do we ever see any of these people again?
No.
Okay, cool.
Voyager says, see you later, and carries on, and we never speak of these people again.
Oh, no.
I'm sure everything's fine. Don't worry, Brian. I'm sure it's all fine. They're out there running their race still. Everybody's happy. And so this, oh, and I skipped over the part where Harry Kim is flirting with the lady that they picked up who was the other racer, but she is clearly not interested in him. Because nobody's interested in Harry Kim because Harry Kim is the worst.
Oh, hey.
Sorry, I don't like Harry Kim. He tries. But she gives a little interest to Harry Kim, and it becomes clear why later as well, why she kind of gives him a little bit of interest. Mm-hmm. And then we find out she has a co-pilot. Her co-pilot gets injured in, I forget, something happens to they're like the first leg of the race, there's an accident, her co-pilot gets injured, Harry Kim has to swap out and he volunteers to be her co-pilot. B'Elanna asks Harry Kim if she can be Tom's co-pilot so that they can spend the time together, which seemed like an obvious solution right from the get-go, but what do I know. And B'Elanna says, you know, I think of it this way, you are upgrading from an ensign to a chief engineer. And B'Elanna is, in fact, much better at this than I think Harry Kim would be. So Tom Paris is a little hesitant to welcome her aboard, which I can understand because I'm the kind of person who, when I have a plan in mind and then it changes at the last minute, it takes me a little while to recalibrate myself to the new reality.
That's true, but the subtext here is that he's annoyed that it's his wife. So I'm sure if it was Marisa, you wouldn't be upset. You know, like that's not something that, you know, you wouldn't be upset if Marisa joined you on a fun race adventure.
Probably not. I would. It would still take me a moment to think, oh, you're not Harry Kim. but I'll roll with it. Tom Paris did seem a little
more.
So
you walk into the room every day and you're like, okay, Harry Kim or Marisa?
You never know.
Okay, you're Marisa.
You can never
tell. One day it will be Harry Kim and I will be prepared.
And that's right. I'll be ready. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'll I'll cross that Harry when I get to it. And so begins the race. Oh, it's very exciting. Now, I feel like the race is supposed to be exciting, but I'm not sure it is.
It really wasn't. And the fact that Star Trek is so much about, you know, people in spaceships talking and coordinating things, we got a lot of that, but we also had nice moments of people talking while the race is going on. Mm-hmm. So, like, even though the race isn't very interesting, it still affords the characters moments to talk about things in the middle of the race, which I thought was nice.
Yes. And that's why, so there's this tension, right? That B'Elanna is upset with, and actually, I guess the big thing that I should mention is when she was talking to Neelix, she basically decided, well, I'm going to break up with Tom Paris because we just don't share the same interests. We can't talk to each other. So this is a waste of time. So she goes to the Delta Flyer, and Neelix basically is like, oh, well, you should probably tell him before the race. And she says, I don't want to ruin the race for him. And then she is on the ship with him, and then it's awkward, although Tom Paris doesn't know what's going on. But then she starts making a bunch of kind of leading, or I should say pointed observations. And,
yes.
And Tom quickly picks up that maybe she's not talking about the race and that she's talking about their relationship. Because she's like, you know, some pilots are inconsiderate jerks.
There's also a moment in a little bit earlier where Seven of Nine is... Do people actually call her Seven of Nine or just Seven?
Her friends call her Seven.
Okay. So Seven mentioned, like, you know, I'm not actually into this race, but I figured it would help me get closer with Tom if I was interested in the race. And I feel like mm-hmm. that's the kernel of the idea to join him as his co-pilot, which I thought was a nice moment because it was a nice little bit of character motivation. But it also was the cool, like, light bulb moment. Huh. Maybe this is a way to save our romantic weekend I set aside all this time for.
Exactly. And I will say, as someone who is in a long-term relationship, you don't always share the same interests with your partner, but you make an effort to acknowledge that they like something and you learn a little bit about it because you love them. And so you want to, you know, appreciate the things that they appreciate.
Exactly.
And so B'Elanna is like, okay, I guess I can be on this stupid race because Tom likes it. But still, she's not so sure if she wants to continue the relationship. Which basically the race is the setting for them to explore their relationship. And on that Delta Flyer, they are doing that. Meanwhile, on the aliens spacecraft, hijinks ensue when Harry Kim realizes that this alien is up to no good. Because what happens? Oh, her panel shorts out again, nearly killing Harry Kim, but he runs away before it hurts him, and he realizes that she has been sabotaging the race the entire time. And he gets her phaser and holds her, you know, basically is like, well, we'll wait here. She has disabled communications. And this is where we find out that that piece of equipment that she gave them to let their Delta Flyer enter the race is actually sabotaged. And
dun, dun, dun.
Yes, and what she wants is the Delta Flyer to get to the end of the race and then blow up and kill everybody, which would be bad, one assumes, for the peace treaty.
One assumes.
I would imagine that would cause some trouble.
We also had the most extreme parallel editing I've seen in something that wasn't like an art house movie, which was like cutting back and forth for maybe a sentence or two or a beat or two between Tom Paris's ship and the other ship with the phaser standoff. And mm-hmm. it was a little mind-boggling to watch.
Yes, because they wanted to show, oh, ratchet up the tension here. Or these characters you know and love are going to die together, right? And no, they're not going to. They're going to be fine. And Harry Kim sends out some Morse code to Tom Paris. Tom,
okay, well, before this happened, there was no way he was able to get that much Morse code from like the two dots and two dashes that were coming through the amplitude meter. Oh my God.
Yeah, he got a lot of Morse code from very little Morse code. But it's a TV show, you know, they figure most of the people watching this don't know Morse code, so it'll be fine.
Exactly.
But before that happens, Tom and B'Elanna have this discussion where B'Elanna is basically like, you know, I don't know what's happening here. And Tom is like, well, maybe we should get married. Let's get engaged. And B'Elanna's like, what? I don't think. Well, she doesn't say no. She's surprised. And then they have to deal with this bomb, basically. Their shuttlecraft is going to blow up. So they have to deal with that. And then there's a literal countdown of like 10 seconds. And Tom Paris is like, well, B'Elanna, it's now or never. Tell me if you're going to marry me. And B'Elanna rightfully is like, no, I'm not going to tell you with a, if we're going to die in 10 seconds. That makes no sense. And possibly my favorite part of this episode is they solve that. Yes, Tom Paris and B'Elanna don't die. They solve that problem because that's what Star Trek characters do. Yes. And once that crisis is averted, Tom says, so I would like an answer to my question. And B'Elanna's like, oh, I thought that was just kind of contingent on the fact that we were going to die. So you just wanted to, you know, before we die, profess your love to me. And Tom is like, no, I really meant it. Which was nice.
Yeah, it was a sweet moment. I still don't quite understand why they had to eject the whole core and not just the fuel converter. And then there was an explosion that somehow was killing everyone in a million kilometers, but they survived. That was very confusing, but I'm very glad that they're engaged now.
just roll with it. It would be sad if they died. Well, they navigate to some kind of nebula that dampens the effects so that they can be okay, apparently. Mm. That's the technobabble reason for that. And then this is, so when Marissa was on this podcast, we watched an episode that featured of Deep Space Nine, and Deep Space Nine has a married couple on it as characters, Miles and Keiko O'Brien. And one of the things that annoyed Marissa was that in the future, she posits, women would not be taking their husbands' last names. To which I got some angry email from people who thought, why wouldn't women take their husbands' last names? And it was something that, you know, I had no strong opinion one way or the other about. Marissa didn't take my last name. It's fine. I think it's up to the woman. I don't really care one way or the other. But there is a nice scene where Tom says, B'Elanna Paris has a nice ring to it. And she shuts it down immediately and says, I'm not taking your name. How about Tom Torres? To which he says, you're kidding, right?
Well, I mean, he likes, you know, 1960s Camaros, and I'm sure his brain, a little bit of his brain was left in the holodeck in the 1960s, I guess, in that last episode.
And I think, and once again, to be clear, I think that it is up to the woman to choose if she wants to take her husband's last name as a sign of her commitment or whatever, that's cool. If she doesn't, that's cool. If you want to hyphenate, that's cool. Marissa's last name is McClellan, so we decided hyphenating McNulty McClellan is a mouthful, and we were not going to make anyone do that. And it was so close. Like, she wouldn't even have to change her monogram, so it's fine.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that works out.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's I just wanted to highlight that because I know Marissa, it would make her proud that B'Elanna was like, no, I'm keeping my last name.
Yeah, that was a nice little moment, especially because, again, extrapolating from 2001 feminism, like, this was about as, you know, progressive as that kind of mainstream television would have allowed for. So I guess that makes sense, but it was also a funny moment compared to that last episode of Marissa.
Exactly. And they, everybody is happy. The race is fine. They need Captain Janeway says, we're here to help with the peace or something. So that gives me an opportunity to give my two senior officers some much needed time off. And then we find out that B'Elanna and Tom are spending a couple days, I guess, just in the Delta Flyer on their honeymoon, I guess.
You know, I guess it makes sense. I don't know where they got the champagne if they're on such scarce, you know, supplies for the Voyager. Maybe they're in the holodeck and chose to be in the Delta Flyer with the champagne.
This is some Inception stuff.
Dun dun.
Yeah, and they have a little Just Married on the Delta Flyer, and they've got, like, I don't know what they have tied to it, but, and that's how it ends. Kind of a cute little ending.
Cute little ending.
To, you know, an episode that probably was here because they needed to have 26 episodes.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, when you think about the kinds of stereotypical sitcom episodes, not that this is a sitcom, but it's a 26-episode season. So when you think about the kinds of episodes you need to fill up that kind of time, having a race and having a fun sporting event for everyone to do is absolutely a, like, stereotypical fun thing to do for a sitcom or TV show.
Exactly. And as you said at the very beginning of the podcast, there is an important character moment here in this episode. So it's not like there's no, it doesn't, like, the plot doesn't stop it does advance the plot, but it takes a whole lot of time to get to that point. And not my favorite Voyager episode, if I'm being honest.
I mean, yes, I get that. But for the one I get to watch every, you know, presidential term, mm-hmm. then I thought it was a fun one. I thought it was a good thing to a good way to spend 45 minutes.
It's not and the worst it's, either.
Yeah, it's selling me on spending more time with Voyager, which is definitely something I'm running out of shows to watch. So I'm excited to go back to something that I know has like a good run of seven seasons for me to sink my teeth into.
Yes, you can binge watch the heck out of Voyager, and it's available on all the streaming platforms.
Yeah, there's seven seasons. There's a whole bunch of other stuff going in there. And there's a new podcast on The Incomparable called Voyager Revisited,
yes.
which is absolutely wonderful and definitely something I want to jump into and watch with Gene McDonald.
That's right. I believe I was the first guest on that podcast. I could be wrong.
Oh, yeah, you were. Yeah, so Gene McDonald and Scott McNulty, episode one. Heck yeah.
There you go. See, I get around. People, very rarely, Brian, do people invite me onto their podcast. I don't know why, but when they do, I show up.
Yay! And we're going to do that with Most Important Meal, too. I want you on the show very badly.
That wasn't me trying to guilt you into getting me on your podcast. But,
and that was totally me guilting you onto my podcast.
Well, I'll be there because I seek attention.
Three eggs, two bananas.
That's me. Delicious. Every day. All 0 point foods on Weight Watchers for people listening. So that's why I eat them. Although I love bananas, I probably eat way more. But how many bananas a day do you think I eat, Brian?
Okay. So if you have two at breakfast, my guess is you eat seven bananas a day.
That is a little over. I probably eat 5 to 6 bananas a day, which is still.
I was one over. Come on. Right, that kind of tone isn't worth
a little over. Which is probably, if a nutritionist is listening, they're probably thinking, that's probably too many bananas for one person to eat. But they're like nature's candy. They're easy. They're delicious. So I eat them.
I like the flavor of bananas. I don't like the texture. The main reason. So like I'll freeze bananas and put them into smoothies. Mm-hmm. But I'm allergic to most fruits. So the texture and like the burny mouth sensation I get is usually not worth the flavor of the fruit I do, except for bananas, which I will incorporate into other things.
Oh, that makes sense. I do not like most fruit. So there are limited. I am not allergic. I just don't like them. So I have a limited group of fruit that I will visit and consume. And that includes really two things, bananas and cantaloupe. So those are the two things I like. Please keep your fruit opinions to yourself, listeners. I know some people do not like either of those things, and that is fine.
Your holodeck would be filled with bananas and cantaloupe.
That's right. And hopefully you would be there, Brian, so we could talk about Star Trek and breakfast. Thank you for joining me.
Of course. Thanks so much for having me on. Whatever tomorrow brings, I'll be there.
That's creepy.